During the traditional lead up to Christmas several years ago, a billboard went up outside of New Jersey, the entrance to the Lincoln Tunnel. And the billboard showed a familiar nativity scene in silhouette with three magi riding their camels toward the manger. But the text printed with the familiar image was rather unexpected. You know it's a myth, it said. This season, celebrate reason. And the ad was sponsored by the group of American atheists. Well, this ad sparked a variety of responses, but most notably was the billboard on the other side of the Manhattan Tunnel that went up with a picture of Mary and Joseph and the baby Jesus that read, "You know it's real. This season, celebrate Jesus." Over the years, various skeptics and critics have taken aim at the Christmas stories, including scholars who have suggested that there is nothing historical in the Matthew story of the visit of the Magi that we will be looking at. They've basically said it's fake news. That is, it never really happened, or the facts were altered to fit the Old Testament prophecies to make it look like Jesus fit the part. But underlining the probability of this story is the fact that we have Roman records of a comparable visit by Eastern Magi to visit Emperor Nero in 66 AD. Add to this the fact that astrology was prohibited by the Old and New Testament, and it becomes clear that Matthew is not likely to have invented this story. As scholars such as Leon Morris have noted, it is much more probable that Matthew started from what he knew happened and brought forward passages from Scripture to show it happened in accordance with the prophecy, rather than the prophecy led to the creation of the stories, you know, that lie instead. So I want us to turn to Matthew chapter 2. And to read the story, which is probably familiar to many, and yet it may be new to some. After Jesus was born in Bethlehem in Judea, during the time of King Herod, Magi from the east came to Jerusalem and asked, "Where is the one who has been born King of the Jews? We saw his star when it rose and have come to worship him." When King Herod heard this, he was disturbed, and all Jerusalem with him. When he had called together all the people's chief priests and teachers of the law, he asked them where the Messiah was to be born. "In Bethlehem in Judea," they replied, "for this is what the prophet has written. But you, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah. For out of you will come a ruler who will shepherd my people Israel." Then Herod called the Magi secretly and found out from them the exact time the star had appeared. He sent them to Bethlehem and said, "Go and search carefully for the child. As soon as you find him, report to me so that I too may go and worship him." After they heard the king, they went on their way, and the star that they had seen when it rose went ahead of them until it stopped over the place where the child was. When they saw the star, they were overjoyed. On coming to the house, they saw the child with his mother Mary, and they bowed down and worshipped him. Then they opened their treasures and presented him with gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. And having been warned in a dream not to go back to Herod, they returned to their country by another route. Of the various characters that we find in the Christmas story, I find the visit of the Magi especially intriguing, since their arrival in Jerusalem created such a stir in the highest levels of government, something that happens with a surprising ease, as some of you may have seen this past week when the CBC had showed Home Alone 2, Lost in New York, and the editors. Among the edits that they left out was the 8-second cameo with Donald Trump and Kevin. And that's when the president, of course, saw that. That sparked no small storm in the media. If you want to know the whole story, the fact is it was edited many years before. The TV version, they needed to find 8 minutes worth of advertisements that they could fit in, but, you know, it looked like a conspiracy. Well, as far as we know from Luke's account of the Christmas story, few people took notice of the shepherds' visit to Bethlehem. But the Magi's arrival in Jerusalem, looking for the one who had been born king of the Jews, well, that sparked a storm of controversy. One would have expected distinguished travelers from the east. That's where the wise people and distinguished people came from, you know, who made the long trek to Jerusalem. Well, surely they would be interested in meeting the infamous Herod the Great, as he came to be called. Now, although he was 70 years old at this time, during the 4 decades of his reign, Herod has seen to it that he had left his mark on the empire. I mean, if you want to look for a list of major building projects. I know some of you have been to see the ruins of some of those. Herod built the kind of things that tourists usually come to marvel at. Fortresses like Masada and castles, theaters, great cathedrals, of course, the temple, but also grand sporting complexes. He reinstituted the Olympic Games as part of his reign as well. And the list, it just goes on of his accomplishments. Indeed, when Herod the Great completed one of his most famous building projects, Caesarea Maritima, along the coast, up near the northern part of Israel, he completed this just a few years earlier, about 9 or 10 BC. And the Jewish historian of the time, Josephus, mentions that envoys from many different nations came to see Herod, bringing him gifts. But the Magi, in Matthew's account, came not to gaze upon the great accomplishments of Herod, but to pay tribute to a baby born king of the Jews. As our text notes, Herod was rather disturbed. It's a strong word in Hebrew, deeply troubled, terrified, we might even say, by such news. For he understood well enough that the king referred to by the Magi was a threat to him being king. You see, we all want to be in control, don't we? Or at least to maintain the control that we have. But God's way in the world can never happen when we are in control. Now, since keeping his crown was Herod's lifelong ambition, he was suspicious of anyone who might dethrone him. And although secular history does not record the following story after this of the atrocity of the baby boys in Bethlehem, no one acquainted with the life of Herod doubts him capable of it. Executing rivals was one of the ways to make sure that he remained king. And over his lifetime, Herod's friends, servants, countless enemies, priests, nobles, and even his own family members, including wives and sons, were eliminated. Little wonder, then, that Matthew records that Herod was disturbed, and all Jerusalem with him. Whatever urgent business Herod had that day quickly took second place when he heard rumor of a message in the heavens, no less, that had drawn these foreigners to Jerusalem. Since astrology was seriously frowned upon by Jews, we do well to ask ourselves why Matthew, one of the most Jewish of all the gospel writers, should be the one to include the story of the Magi when none of the other gospel writers do. To get an indication of how glaringly Jewish Matthew's gospel is, you only need to turn back to the previous chapter. Notice how Matthew begins. A genealogy. Now, I don't know about you, but I don't recall ever reading a book that started with a family tree. Although maybe some of your own family tree books, but usually they're not page turners and they're not disseminated on a wide basis. And yet, in Jewish history, the most natural and essential way to begin the story of a person's life, especially a great person, was to give their genealogy. And Josephus, the great Jewish historian of that first century, began his own autobiography with his personal pedigree, his family tree. And by contrast, Herod the Great was despised by the pure-blooded Jews because he was of mixed race. Those of you who know the Harry Potter series might think of him as a mudblood, right? And as a result, Herod made sure to destroy all of the official records, you know, genealogical records, so that no one could prove to be more pure-blooded than him. Well, Herod had enough stress in his life trying to silence the rumblings of the Jews in his empire without external threats from foreigners now showing up on his doorstep. So having prominent Gentiles come talking about how it was written in the stars, no less, that his replacement had arrived, well, that was the worst possible news, especially given how widely it was believed at the time that the stars marked the births of great people and events. Caesar Augustus, for example, and Alexander the Great were born under great astrological signs. And what I found even more interesting is not only Caesar Augustus, but Herod too had a star imprinted on the currency coins of the day. So on the coins that they found, there's a star. We're born under a star, you know, a famous star of some coin. And it was basically saying, I'm the real deal. I'm authentically the great king. And of course, it's clear from the story that the Magi didn't understand, I think, how much their very presence and testimony rocked the political foundations of the empire. But Matthew is clear that the child born to Mary and Joseph was the true king, and that he had come to change the world for the better. There are clear echoes in Jesus' birth of, you will recall, Moses' birth and the great oppressive king or Pharaoh at that time. And we know that God used that baby, right, to topple the great Egyptian empire. And Matthew is already including this story to show here is the new and greater Moses that is coming on the scene. There was opposition to Moses then. There is opposition to this greater new Moses now. And we've already seen the inclusion in Jesus' pedigree. If you look through his family tree close enough, you will see he is indeed the long-awaited king of the Jews. But unlike Herod, Matthew doesn't hide and take the Gentiles out and disreputable characters out of the family tree. Matthew includes the women. He talks about some of the background in them in the family tree. Well, he is doing this against the trend of the day because he is also announcing through this that this is the Savior of all people. Yes, he comes from the line of David. But included already in that line, God has been including Gentiles all along the way. And Matthew here is concerned to show that Jesus has always had universal meaning and significance. And nowhere does he do this more directly than in these birth narratives. Matthew combines his emphasis on Jesus, kind of we would call it cross-cultural heritage, his universal humanity with the story of Jesus' unique divinity. What is conceived, back in chapter 1 in the message that Dave, what is conceived in her is from the Holy Spirit. And then he illustrates Jesus' multi-ethnic and multinational appeal by telling the story of prominent Gentiles who show up in Jerusalem looking for the one who had been born king of the Jews. Jesus, Matthew is saying, is good news for all people. It's interesting how God uses the language of the Magi's own culture, astronomy and astrology, in their spiritual quest. It was like one of the prominent sciences of the day, we would say. And people from the East, the Magi, which is part of Daniel's tradition, if you go back to the Old Testament, they were known throughout the world that, yes, there was astrology. They believed people's lives were guided by the stars, but that meant we need to really, you know, be able to track the movements of the planets and stars. And they had done this down to a science, we would say. And God continues to use various sources and languages, we might say, including various kinds of cultural media to draw people to himself. Often people in testimonies will remark about a particular song that may not have been Christian, but contained a message that drew them. Or a scene in a movie, or a miracle that they or someone else experienced. Testimonies. I have a good friend, Ken, and before he was a Christian, he's a professional animator, loved all things Muppets and animation. And there was one song in particular that always gripped him, Kermit the Frog song, The Rainbow Connection. And it was after he came to faith that he said, now I understand. It was always pointing me to some greater connection. We're always wondering what's on the other end of the rainbow. And he said, I found out it was Jesus. That song had been drawing and appealing to him. Francis Collins, a famous scientist, the head of the genome project that mapped the human DNA, when he was doing his intern work as a doctor, medical doctor in the hospital, it was one of his elderly patients that had gone through a very difficult night, and yet she said, well, she had been, you know, she wasn't worried about dying, and, you know, she had her faith in Jesus. And then she just asked him back, you know, do you have any faith? And he said he realized he hadn't really explored that. He had basically taken an atheist position, and it began him on a 1 or 2 year journey of exploring that ended up in him becoming a Christian. I have a good friend from Iran, Fran. And Fran became a follower of Jesus, but it was already when she was back in Iran that she had her first vision of Jesus. It put her on a long journey to finding out more about this Jesus and has become a devout follower of Jesus. God is always at work, speaking to people where they are. The language of creation and culture is important in every age. For the Magi, it drew them far closer to an encounter with Christ than they had ever been. And yet also notice in the story that it could only take them so far. And they got to Jerusalem, they got into the territory, and yet the specific place and significance of the child born there required the added clarity of what we call divine revelation, the scriptures. Though they seemed unaware of the ancient prophecies recorded in the Bible, or else perhaps they were ignorant of, like, where would you find that in the Bible? God provided them access to it. Now, of course, little did the Magi know how disturbing their honest, simple question would be, and the lengths that Herod and the experts would go. And yet it was when the experts began to unpack it, and it's clear that they do it with one voice. You know, the question is really, well, if God is at work, where would one go about finding him? And they came back with one voice, Bethlehem. And this, for it was written by the prophet. A small town, a village really, 6 miles, 8-10 kilometers to the south. And when the information was passed on to the Magi, they quickly made their way to the small town of Bethlehem. And with the reappearance of the star assuring them that they had finally reached what they were looking for. There was much celebration and great joy, the text tells us. And I can just imagine that oft-repeated question. How much longer? Where exactly are we going? Those were finally answered, finally put to rest. And it is clear from their humble worship and valuable gifts that they brought, that they had found in the Christ, the answer to their deepest longings and cravings of their hearts. I used to think gold was the most valuable possession that they brought. And then a while ago, I was watching a TV program about the spice trade and discovered that Magellan, I think the first guy to circumnavigate the globe from England, he had taken all lots of gold that he had plundered, but when he finally got to the spice trade, he found that it was worth more than its weight in gold. And so the Magi here are bringing incredibly valuable gifts of that day. And it is saying, we have found in you something greater than all what we most value and prize. Now, there's something in the story that disturbs me. What disturbs me as a devout student of the Bible is that the religious leaders and King Herod were willing to pass on the news but none of them took the effort to act on it for themselves. Although the scribes knew far more about the Messiah than anyone who could easily turn to the scriptures and explain, you know, where the Messiah was to be born, they personally remained unmoved. They never bothered to take the time, even one day, to go find out for themselves if perhaps God really was at work now in our neighborhood. But the Magi, who had nothing more than the language of the stars to go by, felt compelled to take a long journey. We don't know how long, whether they were from the desert or from Persia or from Babylon, but it was a long journey. You're riding on camels. Camels are usually for long journeys. And yet they went all that way based on the small amount of information that they had. And I wondered, well, who had more truth? You know, the Magi who followed the star and a rumor, or the scribes who had, who had all of the scriptures to go on? And it really comes down to it, it's not the matter of who had more information, right? It really comes down to who acted on the information that they had. I think there's two implications. There's probably many more. But I think one of the implications that Matthew would definitely want us to take away, to not leave Christmas without getting, is to understand and embrace the significance of Jesus. To understand and embrace the significance of Jesus. It wasn't just enough to understand the significance of Jesus, though that is clearly important. And Matthew is going to great lengths to help us to understand the significance of this one who has been born, yes, king, the true king of the Jews, but also the king of the nations. And that is the significance of Jesus. And I think and to embrace the significance of Jesus, it means that we can no longer remain desperately in control of our lives. And sometimes we're not that much different than Herod. We just don't usually have as much control over as many things. But what it is in our lives that we do think we have control over, we want to hold with a firm grip. And when we lose control, whether it's our jobs or our health or our kids, you know, aren't fitting into the mold and staying within the parameters that we want to have for them, it's disturbing to us to lose control. And we need to understand that Jesus is the only one who is able to be in control. And we need to learn to understand and embrace his significance. And I think we also need to understand and embrace the mission of Jesus. Jesus' mission is international. It was interesting to me, mentioned some Iranian friends, visiting with them years ago on their journey to faith. It was curious to me, I know sometimes Christianity can be perceived as a Western religion, right? And yet we were talking about Cyrus, one of the Persian or Iranians in the Bible, right, who is described as a Messiah, a Messiah. That is, one whom God used to restore worship in Jerusalem after the exile. And it was interesting just that this breakdown is like, no, this story has always been a lot bigger. It's always included all of the nations along the way. And Matthew's story like this just helps us not only to understand the mission of Jesus in its breadth, but also calls us to embrace that international mission. And one of the things I have really loved over this past few years of doing the Alpha course is that we went multilingual a couple of years ago. We went multilingual because we had people, you know, speaking different languages, and we were blessed to find out that the Alpha course is not only done in English, it's also been done in other languages. Sometimes it's the captions underneath, and so we just add on another laptop, and we play it in English with the captions, and then we have other languages running in Mandarin, Cantonese, Farsi, running at the same time. And it's just, I love the international flavor and the stories of what it is that brought you to this place of wanting to explore who is Jesus and what difference does he make. And sometimes it is visions. Sometimes it is a miracle of a friend, a changed life. And they said, there's got to be more to this. And so it has just really encouraged and helped me to see anew the mission of Jesus always has been international. And in our day and place, especially in this area of the Tri-Cities, you know, how much more international can you get, right? And sometimes people complain about that. And I say, this is a wonderful opportunity that God has given us. You can be a world traveler just by living here, by talking and getting to know people and the different foods that they bring and the stories and the background, but also an opportunity to share about what they understand about God and what God is doing in their midst. And so that is I commend the implications of the significance of Jesus and the mission of Jesus to you.